Hello, everyone, and welcome to The New Yorkers, a podcast by New York City Cop. I am your host, Kelly Cop, a published photographer, New York City tour business owner, real estate content creator, podcaster, and above all else, a New Yorker.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next Brooklyn-bound train is now arriving.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Joining me today, I have professional photographer Matthew McDermott, who focuses his work on humanitarian efforts, conflict, features, portraits, and news coverage, nationally as well as internationally, too. And most importantly, he is a New Yorker. Welcome to the show, Matthew. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
I'm so happy to see you again.
Again.
Yes.
Yes. Last time we were together was at on 3rd Avenue 49th, where mural.
Yep, down at the mural. Yep.
Of my photo.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, this is awesome. So this is our third time meeting. So thanks, Matt. You're awesome. So I have some questions for you, my friend.
Far away.
Where were you born?
Born Miami, Florida.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know
you. So I'm not native New Yorker.
Really?
Nope, not. I know it's that would be a cool thing. My son and daughter were both born in New York, so they have that.
Yeah. Who I met too.
Yep.
Family.
Yep,
awesome.
Absolutely.
Family.
Yep.
I lived in Florida for 30 years. Did you know that?
Nope. Did not know that. I was only there for 1 year.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Orlando is where I mostly lived most of the time, my life in Florida, but I had a good time there. Most of my family still lives there. My twin brother, blah, blah, blah.
I'm a twin. No kidding.
Identical twin brother.
My mom's identical.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. In fact, my wife's mom is a twin. My cousin had twins. And my wife and I were like, please, no twins.
No twins. Yes. Kevin and I obviously are, like I said, identical. And then my older brother had twin girls and they're fraternal. But I think that's the only twins in our family. So,
I mean, it's an amazing thing. And my mother and her sister are incredible. But the parent twins, I think, would be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. When I see parents with twins, like little kids, I'm like, oh, are they twins? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, good luck. You know, I'm like, we were good kids, but it's much different.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know? So, how did we meet, Matt?
How did we meet? I was around 9/11. I think what, 3 or 4 years?
Three years ago. Yeah.
Reached out to me. Somehow over social media and.
Yeah. Via Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. And
I was just such a fan and still am, if that's the right word or phrase, of what you do, which you're going to talk about shortly. And you're just an incredible photojournalist. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, and you have some very important
24 years working professionally.
Wow.
Photographer, photojournalist.
You have
taken me all over the world.
Yeah. And you have some truly incredible stories that we can't wait to hear about.
Yeah, some wacky stories too.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear more than I already know.
Yeah, we'll see how many we talk about here as far as.
I wish we could go all day. So how did you get into photography, Matthew?
Started in high school. I was always artistic. There's photo class. My mom had an old Canon A1. Took the class, fell in love right away.
Nice.
In fact, our first assignment was actually interesting because I still have the photographs. First assignment was really the teacher said, shoot whatever you want. Just go shoot something that you find interesting, which I think is a great way to start because it obviously can show sort of what you're inclined to. And my mom, parents had split. Dad was in California. I was in Connecticut. I went to school in Farmington, Connecticut. And I went to Hartford. And sat in a kind of a rough neighborhood at a bus stop. And I photographed people coming and going at a bus stop.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And what's funny is I actually look at those photos. It's been a few years I've looked at them. But I remember, looking at them about 10 years ago. And I was like, God, it's funny. There was a style that almost still sort of exists in how I shoot in a way. As far as it was.
That's interesting. I was just going to ask you what particular style.
I mean, obviously I've gotten better. Yeah. I mean, you're working on my craft, but I was like, wow, that's like, I can see how that's my work.
That's interesting because I was going to ask you, you answered the question already. I was going to say, what particular style did you have back then? And you just answered it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of, you know, I mean, it's photojournalism, but, you know, I mean, purists, in a sense, I mean, you know, look, I'm 6'3", tattooed guy. I like eye contact. You know, a lot of purists don't think that's any good. You shouldn't affect you should have as little of a footprint on photojournalism, you know, and, you know, it's like, listen, the work that I do, I have a definite style, you know, and bottom line, this is very hard for me to hide, but I actually like being really uptight. Up close, personal, you know, and there's an exchange between you and your subject, even in photojournalism.
Right.
You know? So, you know, and with that, I mean, I only shoot with two bodies, one long lens, one short lens.
Nice.
You know, majority of my work is actually on a 16 to 35, which is pretty wide, but I like getting it tight. And then the other lens is a 7200. And that's 90% of, you know, as far as work is on that platform.
So then when did you move to New York City?
Moved to New York City in just, not mid 90s, but just, you know, coming into the late 90s.
Right. And what area of the city did you live in?
Moved into Astoria, Queens.
I lived there too for a little bit.
Yeah. And, started bartending at Limelight, you know, I decided.
Really?
You know, yeah. I was living after college. I went to Colorado. I was building houses. And I had a dark room and I was building a portfolio, you know, and whatnot, because I knew at some point I want to get back into do photography. And but I also knew I'm gonna have to make a living somehow in New York. So I was like, you know what? Learn how to bartend. So I took a bartending class in Colorado in Denver and then came here and got a job at Limelight.
The famous Limelight.
Wow. Yep.
You know, I actually feel sad that I missed out on that. I didn't live here at the time.
It was a hell of a time.
That's what I heard. You know, I don't even know what's Limelight now, a restaurant or something.
Yeah. They made it to a bazaar, you know, a marketplace of all sorts of places. But anyways, hell of an experience. It was an amazing time. But I hit a point as far as it was like, okay, I'm ready. You know, and it was the girlfriend at the time, actually, who was also a photographer. She was like, you know, it's time. Come on. I literally walked into the Daily News with a portfolio and I walked out with a box of film and a press pass. And that's where it started.
Nice.
Yep. And that was in the late 90s.
So now we jump forward to 2001.
2001.
9/11, 2001.
Yep.
So tell us what happened that day. You woke up. What happened?
Well, it wasn't even that I woke up. My mother called.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't slated to work until 10 o'clock. And so I was asleep. And she called and she says, what are you doing? Why aren't you moving? You know, I'm like, what's going on? She said, the plane just went to the tower. I was like, what? Wait, what? You know, and it quickly turned on New York One. And I was like, holy shit. And I called my desk and they're like, yeah, of course, go. What do you, you know, and I'm like, and so again, I was in Astoria, Queens. And I just knew as far as trying to go across the 59th Street Bridge or Midtown Tunnel would just be a nightmare. So at that point, I'm a big motorcycle guy, but I was in between bikes. And so I'm going to drive. So I decided, took the Triborough Cross, which is now the RFK. And a buddy of mine, who I'm still dear friends with, I had helped him get into motorcycles and he just bought one. And I called him and I said, I know what you want. And I pull up. Parked at his apartment, which is up on Amsterdam, way uptown, tosses the keys out to me out the window. I jump on his motorcycle with all my gear around and just hop on Broadway and literally an unmarked cruiser with lights flaring, screaming down Broadway. I got right on his bumper, went all the way down.
Let's take a quick break. Hey there, I'm Bellamy Young. I'm an actor and a producer. I've been working with the global humanitarian organization, CARE, and I am so excited to invite you along for my new podcast, She Leads with CARE. Each week, you'll meet some incredible women who have changed their lives and their communities.
We raise our voices for people who don't raise their voices to defend themselves.
Listen to She Leads with CARE now on your favorite podcast platform. New episodes every Tuesday.
And so at what point was this, the 9/11 event, at what point was
one plane had gone in. So at that point, I mean, I don't have any radios on or anything like that on the motorcycle. So I don't even know about the second plane, which is funny. Not funny, but the way we came in following the cover, we ended up going down West Broadway. So we're pretty much coming north to south. Okay, so in my rush going in, I mean, there's all this dust in the air. Adrenaline's pumping, you know, and I have no idea that the second has been hit.
Not even a thought that would even happen either.
You know, but now as I'm coming in, I can see the second, but all I see is one tower, and I'm just out in the rush and the adrenaline. I figured, oh, I can't see the other one. It's behind it. Well, the first one had already dropped. So we get, you know, because I was on right in the bumper of the cop car, you know, they're trying to set up police barriers. I mean, this is all happening super fast. But, you know, get in and, you know, I let the car go. I park the bike behind a building, you know, and because there's dust everywhere. And it was also very, very quiet. I was like, I'm like, there's nobody around. I'm like, what the? And, you know, I'm like, okay. So I just start running in. And I'm, I don't know, two and a half blocks away, something like that. And all of a sudden, the building starts falling.
Right.
So I'm just quick, boom, 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 boom. Actually, when I'm running in, there's people running out. And they're going, what are you doing? Even cops are yelling at me, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
What the hell are you doing? I'm like, I'm going that way. That's where I'm going. You know, I'm like, why are you going this way? That's, you know. You know, literally, then all of a sudden the dust cloud just comes, like a, just this monster wall of dust. And I crouched down.
I put my gear,
I pull my t-shirt out over my gear and then just.
So you're just kind of in the open space right there?
Yeah, I'm just against a corner of a building.
And you're just
crouching down, you know.
Are you thinking this could be
it? I don't know if debris is going to hit me at all or, you know, and just, and boom, everything goes black.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you feel the rumbling and the shake and then all of a sudden just silence, you know, you know, once everything, you know, all of a sudden just the rumbling stopped and took my shirt down. I'm looking around, I'm covered in dust. And I just, you know, you start seeing light and whatnot. I just kept running in. I spent the entire day, you know, in the hole.
Well, what's incredible to me is you still had the wherewithal to compose yourself mentally and go document the day. Which to me is just, I don't even know what the word is. It's just
incredible. You know, I'm going to tell you something. You know, you know? There's times in life, and I feel very fortunate this, and I've had a few times, where when you're tested.
Right.
Okay? And you learn a lot about yourself when you get in those moments, you know, and those real moments of being really tested, you know, and I thank God that, it, you know, I acted in what I believe of who I am, because if I turned and run, I really would have had a hard time living myself. I was there to do a job, and it's like, you know, that's what I'm there to do, and that's what I do.
Right.
And, you know, I hate to say it in the moments, you know, and I've been very fortunate. I mean, I've been shot at, I've been blown. I mean, and I've never gotten hurt, knock on wood, but, you know, I hate to say it, but in the moment, you know, you just kind of danger, who cares? You know, this is what you're there to do, and you run in.
Well, when I interviewed you a couple years ago for the first time, on my social media, that's when you shared all your photos that you took that day, you know, at 9/11, which are incredible and historic. And
yeah, there's a couple in the 9/11 museum.
Famous. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, there's some in the 9/11 museum.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Wow. And there is also a famous photo that you took that people that are listening to, I'm sure, have seen, which is the, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, it's the fireman kneeling, praying on the axe.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Which is last time we saw each other, there's a about 8-story mural on the side of a building on 3rd Avenue at 49th Street on the corner.
Yep.
By famous Brazilian graffiti artist Cobra.
Yep. Eduardo Cobra.
It's incredible.
Yep. On the Upper East Side.
Yep. And it's still there, and it looks just
an iconic.
Yeah, and it's been there for a few years.
Mural of your photo. Can you tell us that moment when you caught that photo?
Yeah. So, you know, can't remember what time of day, but, you know, I don't know, maybe it was 11. I can't even remember.
Right.
But, his name was, Mike Bellatoni, and he was stationed in Staten Island, and he and his crew all came over on the ferry. So coming over on the ferry, they, you know, didn't really have any tools or anything as far as major hardware equipment to bring. And unfortunately, also, obviously, most of the equipment that's on site there was just completely damaged. So he, on the Staten Island ferry that he came across, he pulled the axe from the ferry and to, you know, to at least be running in with something.
Right.
So, and I'm you know, photographing and you know, I stop for a moment and, you know, I'm looking around and I just, for some reason, I turned around and I see him just not too far behind me on a knee on the axe, you know, with his head down, you know, and I took 3 frames and then I went up to him. I'm like, look, man, are you doing what you think you're doing right? He's like, yeah, I'm just, you know, it's like, I know I've lost brothers in here, you know, and yeah, just quick prayer. And that is, you know, one of the, you know, I've had, there's a couple of photos that really became famous, but that was,
right.
I mean, I've seen tattoos of it. I've seen,
right. You know,
memorials of
it's
it.
Worldwide,
different ways all over the place. And,
you know. Right. And so, you know, out of that day, you know, because of that day and your amazing, you know, photos that you, you know, that documented that terrible day, you've had people contact you that have you've inspired people, right? With
very shortly after, obviously, as photos are being released out to the world between newspapers and magazines, I can't remember how many, but you know, young men emailing me saying, you know, I saw your photos, I'm enlisting.
Wow,
I'm you know, we're obviously going to go and get revenge, and when you know, I'm signing up. That day, it's interesting. That day, because I, you know, I have family that's military, and
right.
you know, I was debating on going into the military. If I was not at 9/11, I would have signed up. But being at 9/11 and realizing the impact of what a photograph can do, you know, which
right.
just didn't, and frankly, how I did in the moment, it really was like, God, this is what I'm supposed to be doing,
right?
And that moment kept me in the direction of where I'm, you know, I've gone as far as, you know, photography and photojournalism is what I'm supposed to do.
How long were you down at the 9/11 grounds that day?
So I was shooting film at the time.
Yeah.
And I frankly wasn't planning on leaving because I knew once, you know, they're going to set up a perimeter and, you know, even though we press pass or anything like that, they're going to lock this down.
Right.
So, I was going to stay the night.
Right.
You know, and I started conserving film and cause you only had so many rolls on.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, none of the phones worked down there. You know, crazy enough. So girlfriend at the time, most importantly, my mom, they're watching this on the news. I'm in Connecticut, my mom and stepdad. And my mom just, you know, she was like, I killed my son. And I'm her only son. My mom and I are just inseparable.
Right. Oh, I know.
She's like, I killed my son. She's like, I called him and woke him up and he's dead. He's in stepdad who's mixed military. He's like Matt knows what he's doing.
And that makes
Matt knows how to operate. He's like, he's fine. And they kept calling the Post because that's who I was shooting for, the New York Post.
Mm-hmm.
And the Post hadn't heard from me. So they didn't know. So I was one of the last accounted people. And, you know, but they kept lying to her because they didn't know what to say. They're like, oh, yeah, we heard from her because, you know. So I finally got contact, found a payphone that worked. And, you know, the desk was like, I think it was like 6 o'clock at that time. They're like, we need you to get out now and get your work up. Cause again, we're doing film. So it's like, you got to bring it to the office, put it in the soup, process it. And I was like, look, I'm here. You know, like, no, we need your stuff now. So I think it was probably 6, 7. It was a little later. I'm covered in dust. I'm covered in crap. I mean, you know, it's, you know, your skin's kind of on fire. You know, even at that point, I mean, you know, nobody had masks. Nobody had anything.
Right.
Breathing this crap all day long.
I'm sure you've seen things that none of us could have imagined.
Imagine. So they brought me on, brought my work up and, you know, boom, you know, photos went out and just, you know, that changed everything. You know, and it's funny where we are now in life and in the country, you know, you sit there and realize like how innocent things seemed to be before that day. And that day just changed everything.
Yeah. It did.
Yeah.
Changed the world forever.
Yep. Yep.
You know, completely different trajectory now.
Yep.
Also, Matthew, Jay, my executive producer here, his father was down at 9/11 as well.
No kidding.
Yeah. So my dad worked at Merrill Lynch at the time. He'd been working there for, I think, about 20 years.
I'm just going to, is he okay?
Yes. No,
okay.
He's fine.
All right, thank God.
He's fine.
Okay.
He was able to make it down and out of the building. He helped a bunch of people make it out. And
that's amazing.
My mom was scared to death because she knew that he worked there.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you're a young guy. How old were you when this happened?
I was, 2001? So I was 3.
Yeah, it didn't really affect you, too.
I didn't remember it. I didn't realize it. But
you've been told the stories.
I've been told the stories.
Wow. Yeah.
I guess was up at the Twin Towers before they went down.
Right.
My dad worked there. He had his people babysit me when I was
a baby. Well, they had a nursery there and everything. I wonder if you were ever at the nursery. Yeah. Well, wow.
You know, it's amazing though. It shows as far as how that day, how we're all so
connected,
how many people are connected so directly.
I want to talk to your dad here.
Yeah.
We need to talk to your dad here too.
Yes. No,
but awesome.
I think
thanks for telling us. What were you going to say? I'm so sorry.
Oh no, he would love to. He'd love to be on the show.
Of course, that also makes me feel really, really old. Three.
Me too. Me too. Awesome. Yay. You're the best.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. You know, and this is something that is hard to, some people may not understand, but it, for me, it really was one of the proudest days of my life. And I feel so honored to have been there and to be able to have experienced it in the sense of as a photographer and do it. And I did my job to, you know, I'm very proud of myself of what I did in the time and the work. And again, that these the photos have been all over the world. And like I said, I mean, you know, there's a mural right now sitting up on Third, which is, you know, so it's still.
I love that so much too.
Yeah. I mean, people still look at this stuff and go, my God.
Is there anywhere that anybody can see these photos online? Do you have a website? You go to your website and they can see it, these photos?
Yep.
Do you want to tell us what it is?
www.mcdermottphotos.com.
Perfect.
Yep. That's McDermott, M-O-T-T, not I-T-T.
But, well, thanks for telling us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'd love it, you know, for people to take a look. Cause,
I would too.
You know, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of the things, you know, you should never forget, but, as time passes, you know, I mean, it's unavoidable that
now it's been 23 years. It's already, you know?
Yeah.
So can you tell us now about your experience in Haiti?
Haiti was, that was a hell of a job too. Haiti, I went down with the humanitarian aid organization, AmeriCares, who, you know, I've been doing work for years, and fantastic organization out of Stamford, Connecticut. And we actually, they have a lot of connections, and a Coca-Cola exec, or, you know, lent us a G4 or G3, a private plane to fly down there. So we were one of the first ones to fly.
For the earthquake in what year?
Oh God, Haiti was 2010.
2010 was terrible earthquake.
Yeah. And, you know, with the, so, you know, we flew in and it was totally bizarre because we had this beautiful stewardess and like whatever food you want. And I've been in these kind of environments before as far as just chaos and, you know, pretty much, you know, you go into these things, like, you know, pretty much what you have on you is, you know, you may have to, you know, power bars and beef jerky to live off of, you know, whatever you can carry in your pocket. So she made me, you know, pasta. I was like stuffing my face with as much food as I can. So it's like, I don't know when to be eating it.
Yeah.
And, we land and hit the ground, and you know it. You know, I've seen a lot of death and destruction, but Haiti was a whole next level. It really was. I mean, you know, they believe they don't even know the exact number, but I mean, whether, you know, estimates of anywhere from 350 to 500,000 people were killed.
Horrific.
Yeah, and you know, I did some amazing work there, but the bodies. I mean, literally, their bodies were being piled up in streets. I remember finding this giant pile of bodies in a cemetery because they just, you know, literally were just dumping them because they had no idea. There's no space. And, you know, the heat, you know, and the smell and the decay. And, you know, there's another, I remember, pile of bodies of children piled up in the street. I mean, it, you know, the devastation was just next level stuff. It was just unbelievable.
Did you see some issues or like somebody?
Oh, I mean, like, you know, things obviously, you know, things break down very quickly. Right. And, you know, and I don't care where it is in what country, as far as, you know, when all things, you know, are lost like that. And so, you know, people are obviously struggling for food, water, supplies, you know, and in those kind of environments, similar happened in Katrina. It gets very tribal as far as to like neighborhoods band together for protection and whatnot. And I know, I mean, I got in the middle of a machete fight. It was, I don't know, probably 8 to 10 guys fighting with machetes. And I was wide angle lens right in the middle of a shooting. And I have a shot of my hand pushing one guy away from me with the machete up. And
you got to show us that one soon.
Yeah. We went out one night driving. You know, we got caught up in a neighborhood and I was driving. And they literally tried to roadblock us in. And then, you know, I did some quick aggressive driving, got out of there, and they started shooting at us.
How long are you there in Haiti?
I want to say it was 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I actually had to leave ever since 9/11. I've been to a lot of really nasty places. I'm susceptible to bronchitis.
I understand.
And, you know, when I'm in a heavy dust environment for a long period of time without any quality food or, you know, like, you're not sleeping, your body's breaking down.
Yeah.
And I started getting, you know, and literally I was just.
I get that too. So I get,
you know, the organization I was with, I mean, they had meds on them and whatnot. And I started doing that, but they got to the point, they're like, we got to get you out of here. you know, and which I begrudgingly, but it really, I hit a point. I was like, yeah.
So tell us about now. Can you tell us about Katrina? You're a Katrina too.
For yeah. Katrina.
Hurricane Katrina.
Hurricane Katrina. I actually, what's interesting about the Hurricane Katrina, I just flew back from Niger doing covering famine for the same organization, humanitarian aid organization. And again, the New York Post called, you know, I called them when I landed, you know, because I knew I was hearing about Katrina because it happened when I was there as far as in Niger. So when I landed, I called them me and they're like, thank God you're back. Like, we need you to go down there.
Right.
I'm like, yep. Because they, you know, they sent a photographer, two photographers, one or two, I can't remember, but you know, they were having issues. You know, they'd already gotten their car washed away and they're like, Matt, we need you to go down there. Because, you know, I have done that kind of stuff before. So yeah, we I actually, amazing enough, because you know, the stories of what you hear, like, you know, that the, you know, no rescuers couldn't get in, all this kind of stuff. There's no access, and we just left, you know, so people are just stranded, just left. I flew into Baton Rouge. I rented a big giant vehicle. I loaded it up with every supply I could find as far as food, because I knew other people that I knew were down there. Also, you know, got a bunch of bottles of Jack Daniels because I knew, you know, we're going to be needing that too. and I drove all the way in. I drove right in. You know, there's a couple of checkpoints, but again, I had badges, you know, as far as from my humanitarian aid group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, smart thing when in these kind of environments, smart thing you can always do is buy any kind of a flashing light, like, you know, an amber or white or anything, as far as throw it on your vehicle. You get the checkpoints, you know, you just say, hey, man, got to get in.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, hit a couple checkpoints. They were like, yeah, go. I'm like, cool. Drove all the way in. So meaning when they kept saying, oh, we can't get in to help people.
Yeah.
Complete nonsense.
What do you have anything that sticks in your memory from Katrina?
Well, God, you know,
I know you saw
it. I mean, it literally in many ways, it was, you know, it's like watching like an episode of The Walking Dead and stuff like that. Because it got to the point of danger. You know, again, you know, neighborhoods would come together because of
like tribal, like you said,
the looting that was going on. I mean, you know, hearing about people getting raped and killed, that all was happening. In fact, the house that we were all crashed at, a guy was shot and killed one night before I got there outside by a neighbor who was trying to break in.
Sad house, easily, you know, things can break down.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I came across this, you know, and again, the people that were left behind were people that didn't have the ability to leave.
Right. I remember just,
you know,
I remember. On
TV, and I hate to say it. I mean, it's a lot of people, you know, that don't have resources, don't have money. They didn't have cars, weren't able to go anywhere.
Do you remember what year was that? I'm sorry.
That was,
if you don't know, it's okay.
God, I hate to say it. 06.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Oh, that might be, if I'm wrong on that, that sucks. I apologize to anybody. My memory's.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember this. I can't remember the specific year either. That's why I asked you.
Yeah. I want to say it's 06. I came up to this one. It was a living hotel situation as far as where people lived there. The bottom floors were all washed out. So there was two floors above that. It was all these people living in. And they had put up barricades in the front because there was another group of people living in a similar hotel, like two blocks down. And they were literally warring with each other over supplies.
Jeez.
So they had guys with bats and whatnot all manning this front gate 24/7.
So in these scenarios, be it, you know, 9/11, Haiti, you know, at Hurricane Katrina. Are you ever fearful for your life? Are you just in the moment, so to speak?
Again,
just,
that's the thing. You know what? I look back on stuff and I go, man, God, I was either incredibly stupid or just incredibly arrogant, you know, as far as like just running in kind of just blindly.
I know how to operate.
I'm good on my feet, you know, and I can handle myself, but still there's times I look back on, oh, God, that was stupid. You know? And again, I've been very lucky. I've come close where I probably 1 inch this way, 1 inch that way, you know, I would have been killed. But
hand in that machete picture or whatever you said,
maybe my grandmother's looking over me, you know, or something like that. But, God, what was I going to say? The amazing thing that I've learned also, which is really scary about America, especially where we're at right now, like Katrina, for example. I mean, I believe, especially America, because we're not a melting pot. I mean, there's just so much non-connection between people and so quick to anger, okay? And we really are 3 to 4 days away from total chaos.
Right.
You know, you think about when we had the blackout, which is 3 days? you know, I mean, say we lose the power grid, you know, or something like Katrina happened here.
Right.
Where literally you're on your own for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month.
Right.
You know, the first day, first 2 days is a party. Third, people get scared. Fourth, it's just complete total breakdown. And it just goes to violence, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's, that's really scary stuff. And that's very real. And God, you know, Katrina was like,
you've
that.
Seen it firsthand,
seen it firsthand
multiple times.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. But America is, I've seen it's the worst as far as how quickly we could go to
really.
Yep. Yep.
It's interesting. Yep. Hear.
And again, you know, I mean, other countries, you know, again, you know, we have so many different races. We have so many different social levels that divide us. So when pardon my language, things go wrong, you know, things go sideways that bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the anger that bubbles between the surface, it comes up.
Well, we're also one of the countries that goes, you know, and helps other countries. If that happens, something of catastrophic happens here, who will come help us?
Yeah. Yeah.
So just
it,
a,
yeah, no, it's a very real thing. And it's a very scary thing. Like I said, I've seen it firsthand. So, I mean, I'm not a prepper in any kind of way, but
you know, what's so funny that you just said that? I have these good friends who live in South Carolina and they're kind of preppers. And so I, you know, this is pre-pandemic and I knew they were kind of preppers, some good friends. And I thought, well, that's a little bizarre, whatever. Pandemic hits. I'm like, I go stay with them. We had steaks for 6 months. We had everything you could think of. I'm like, this is the smartest thing they ever did.
Yeah.
It completely changed my perspective about preppers.
Yeah. Which funny. I get it. You know, I mean, I know what to do as far as something happens, but but there's a bunch of friends who are all like, if things get really bad, yeah. Like, can I come with you?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I like, think about it.
Wherever you're going or whatever you're doing, can I go?
Randomly, I lay in bed and just think, should I buy 20 gallons of water, put them in my closet and buy, you know, canned food just in case or, you know, so I do think about that once in a while now.
Yeah.
With a pandemic for me, I mean, you've seen a lot more in life than I have, than most of us have. But just the pandemic alone for me has made me think about prepping a little, you know?
Changes perspective. Yeah. Really does.
Yep. Awesome.
Absolutely.
Matt, it's been so incredible and interesting as always to talk with you. And after 9/11 and Haiti and Katrina and all the worldwide events you photographed, where do you see you going next? Or what do you see in the future with your photography?
I wish you could answer that for me because I have no clue. I really don't. The business is changing.
Right.
The world is changing quickly. You know, social media, iPhones. I mean, you know, when I used to be hired for jobs in some places, you know, and paid actual, you know, real money. I mean, that's all drying up.
Right.
You know, the back, you know, you would, you know, be hired to go do a job where they wanted a you know, whole full spread photos, the whole nine yards, where now they'll hire somebody, you know, for next to nothing.
With a cell phone.
Yeah. Run one photo and be done. You know, people's attention span is just so short. So I don't know what's next. I mean, I'm trying to figure that out.
So. It's so tough because, I mean, we're in a world of instant gratification when it comes to anything in the news. And so whoever even posts something on their Twitter or whatever it's called now, you know, or Instagram or Facebook, whatever news channel sees, they pick that up right away too. So there's no exclusivity for someone who is a professional photojournalist such as yourself now. So that's what's really sad, you know, because you do much better work than 99%.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the trend is now is it ain't about quality. It's just about
exactly. That's
know, it's about exactly. It's really, you know, unfortunately, mm-hmm. as most places, you know, the world's being run by accountants, you know, and it's, you know, it's what does it cost? So it's like quality versus money.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Screw the quality as long as we can keep that budget down.
Right.
And that's sucks.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know what's next. I mean, I've done so many things in my life. I definitely would love to try out rich. I think that might be a cool job, but figure out how to get there.
Yep.
You know, maybe the lottery is the way to go. Because
you're rich in so many ways.
But I got two little kids now.
Wife and two awesome little kids.
Yeah. So being the awesome cool guy at a bar, being able to tell cool stories, you know, that don't mean shit anymore.
You know, it's really, you know, the last interview before this one that I did with Matthew was at the fireman mural on the Upper East Side.
Yep.
And it was, I loved how you were, your son was asking questions. You were talking to your son.
Yeah, Dean.
About the story that day. It was really cute.
Yeah, Dean, six, yeah. And Billy, my little girl, she's three. And they're just amazing.
Yeah.
And just absolutely amazing. I'm so in love with them. I love being a father. That's one thing I can tell you. What's next is just being a great father.
Right.
But with that is
what you are.
Needing to figure out a way to make more money to be able to give them things that, you know.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
You with us, Jay?
Yeah.
But I do. I love being a photographer. I love what I've done. I'm very proud of the work, the body of work I've done. It's for over 24 years. Still, you know, obviously I just came off of work today.
Yeah. And thank you. You zipped over here from a long day. I didn't mean to interrupt you. From a long day, you're tired. You have kids at home, a wife, and then you stopped here to talk with us for this hour or whatever. So thank you.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Truly,
thank you enough as far as having me.
I want to talk to you more and more and more. Yeah, you know,
I can go back.
You know,
do it again.
This is our third time.
Yeah.
So,
but this is a whole new platform for you. So, this is a whole new venture.
Yeah.
So, and this is a little bit different than just doing a quick clip on, you know, Instagram.
Well, you know, I'm very honored and proud to have you on here because you're an amazing friend, an amazing photographer, an amazing everything. So, amazing dad. So
I appreciate that.
Thanks,
Thank
Matthew.
You very much.
Seriously.
And I wish you all the best with this podcast stuff.
Thank you.
Again, if you want me to come back, I will.
Well, you're definitely coming back. Okay. So
all right.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Matthew, for joining us today for this week's episode of the New Yorkers podcast. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you on social media?
Yeah. Social media, Instagram, at McDermott Photos. That's McDermott Photos. And obviously a website, which we mentioned before, which is www.mcdermottphotos.com. I'm a total non-social media guy, which is so stupid as a photographer, but I'm not on Facebook and that kind of stuff, but so be it. But yep, those are the two spots.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. Please like and subscribe to the New Yorkers podcast.
And you can follow the New Yorkers on social media at the New Yorkers podcast.
I like that, Matt. That was good. Please, hey, everyone, please leave a rating or a comment to let us know how you're enjoying the show. We read through all your comments and DMs, so please, we would love to hear from all of you. And as always, I am your host, Kelly Kopp, also known as New York City Kopp across all my social media. Have a lovely day, and we will see you next week.
Rock and roll.
See you, Matthew.
Later.
This is the last stop on this train. Everyone, please leave the train. Thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.